The Last Word with Matt Cooper.
Anne Applebaum is with us. She has written Autocracy Incorporated, The Dictators Who Want to Rule the World. Explain the title, please. Autocracy Inc. or Incorporated. What do you mean by that?
The book describes a network of dictatorships, and they are not linked together by ideology. They are not an alliance. They are not an axis, as I say, a network. Communist China, nationalist Russia, theocratic Iran, North Korea, Venezuela, a group of countries, all of whom seek to rule without checks and balances. These are absolute dictatorships, and all of whom cooperate opportunistically and transactionally when it suits them. Their main goal is to stay in power. In some cases, their main goal is to also keep their money. We're talking about a group of billionaires, for the most part. And part of staying in power and keeping their money is that they need to push back against the ideas and language that come from the democratic world and also from their own opposition. So transparency, accountability, the rule of law, rights and human rights.
There is a contempt for democracy. It's almost regarded as a form of weakness.
It's a form of weakness. They've crafted a whole narrative around it. They describe themselves as safe and stable, and they describe democracy as weak and divided and degenerate, by which they even mean sexually degenerate. The incorporated metaphor, of course, describes it's almost like each has its own business model, but as a group, they share certain values. And one of them, as I said, is this autocratic, authoritarian narrative that they all contribute to in different ways.
Would you include Donald Trump on that list?
I mean, Donald Trump is kind of sui generis because Donald Trump is really genuinely only interested in himself. He doesn't have any ideology. But he's certainly, in this sense, he is also transactional. He's also interested in money, like them. He has no moral reason to do or not to do deals with anybody. And he's also in the sense that he's like them, he's interested not in the fate of America and most Americans, but in himself and his friends. And I think it's also fair to say that he would not see himself as the leader of a democratic alliance. So one of the things I argue in the book is that to counter Autocracy Inc., you need an alliance of democracies and democratic activists from the autocratic world, and he's not going to be the leader of that alliance. He doesn't care about eradicating kleptocracy. He doesn't care about ending money laundering or corruption. He's not interested in fighting authoritarian narratives. In fact, he's very happy to make use of them in his election campaign.
He also seems very impressed by a lot of these individuals. He seems very impressed by Putin, by Orban, by Kim Jong-un.
He's impressed by them because he admires exactly what I just described, the fact that they rule with no opposition. They have no opponents, or that's how he would see it. You know, the Chinese don't have to worry about courts in New York who will who can hold you to account for crimes you've committed. You know, they don't have to worry about newspapers that will investigate your taxes. And so that's why he admires them, because they seem to have absolute power, and that's what he fantasizes about.
But something else they may have in common is not just the desire to maintain control in their own countries, but to disrupt what's going on in other countries, because we've even seen again this week certain American influencers, it's been revealed that they're essentially in the pay of Russia, which seems to be back to its 2016 presidential election tricks of trying to undermine democracy by paying those who would stir dissent.
Well, it's interesting how we're different now from 2016, because in 2016 what the Russians did is they created fake Facebook accounts and sort of anonymous bots, and they tried to create agitation on the internet anonymously. And now there's an actual coterie of people inside the United States, Americans, huge media followings, actually, some of these people, and they are very willing to cooperate with this kind of propaganda. It's both the propaganda of chaos and division, that America's American carnage, America's disaster, it needs a strong man, as well as pro-Russian and anti-Ukraine Ukrainian propaganda, and they're willing to do so, you know, and happily take money from, I mean, it's a very funny story, you know, a mysterious person with a strange European name said, I'm interested in investing in you and I'll pay you $100,000 a week to make a video a week. And they all said, oh, okay, that sounds great, you know. Presumably they did know where it was coming from. But, you know, the point is that the Russians and other members of the autocratic world have allies inside our own countries. And so it's one of the arguments of the book is that, you know, it's not like the Cold War where there's a geographic divide and there's sort of one side is on one side of the Berlin Wall and the other on the other. We're talking about autocratic behaviors. The autocratic world has allies. They have them in the business community. They have them in the journalist and so-called influencer community. And defeating them will require thinking about our own democratic resilience and our own financial system.
You've taken a very deep interest in what's happened in Ukraine, and I know you've actually visited Ukraine quite a lot for your reporting on what's happened. I was very interested in what you wrote in the book about Putin's confidence that he could move into Ukraine and win the war very easily. Didn't expect a disunited Europe to stand up to him. But at the same time, has Europe actually managed to assist Ukraine in the fight back as well as it could have?
So Putin believed his own propaganda. So he believed the West is weak and divided and we will not stand up for our values, and that when he invades Ukraine and occupies Ukrainian territory and builds concentration camps and kidnaps children and takes them to Russia, that we won't object. And he was wrong. We did object and we did aid Ukraine. And it will be remembered as the Biden administration's great achievement, but also it's a great achievement for Europe. But at the same time, just as he underestimated us, we also underestimated the autocratic world. So Putin has had drones from Iran, ammunition from North Korea. The Chinese have imported parts and components to Russia that has helped Russia rebuild its defense industry. And we still haven't taken seriously our sanctions. We haven't taken seriously the kind of economic warfare that the Russians are prepared to carry out. And we haven't won the war. I mean, we haven't given the Ukrainians the right to hit targets inside Russia. We're allowing the war to be dragged out. And I think we're coming close to a real crunch point, because this winter we may once again see floods of Ukrainian refugees. The Russians are trying to destroy the power grid, another crisis may be coming.
Yeah. So does that suggest a couple of things? One, that maybe the sanctions don't work as well as we might have anticipated.
Well, we didn't force them. I mean,
but also because there are alternatives, that the Russians, we stopped taking their oil and gas, they were able to sell it elsewhere to countries that didn't support the rest of the world, that didn't care as much about Ukraine as we in the West did.
Yeah. I mean, so it's true that the Russian economy has declined. They don't make as much money from their oil and gas as they did. But, you know, we still buy gas from them. And gas still comes from Russia, some of it across Ukraine, you know, into the European system, not into every country and not as much as in the past, but it does. We haven't blocked that yet. We haven't, you know, we weren't willing to pay the price ourselves of doing it, however temporary, and we let it continue.
But was it also the case that Putin had the added advantage, not just in being able to take land in Ukraine as he wanted, albeit not as much as he did want, but has had the added benefit of causing political dissension within Europe because of the flood of refugees and Europe's inability to deal with it, and also the cost of living crisis that
deliberate. I mean, Putin had a successful experience with refugees in 2015. You know, he helped the Syrian dictator destroy his country, and that produced the famous wave in that time that caused so much political dissension. And my guess is that he's trying to do it again. He wants to use the Ukrainian refugees to create unrest in Europe, and therefore to continue to divide and undermine democracies. And we, you know, it's therefore incumbent on us to end the war and make sure that doesn't happen.
But then if Trump was to win the election in November, how helpful would that be to Putin if it undermined American support for the Ukrainian resistance?
Trump is very hard to predict because he's interested in himself and what exactly he would do in Ukraine. I've heard very different versions, and I don't want to predict it. It's certainly true that the damage that Trump would do inside the U.S. and to American democracy would create a lot of dissension and distraction. It's hard to imagine, as I said, America as the leader of an alliance for much longer. And of course, yes, it is possible that Trump would say, well, right, I'm going to do deal with Putin. I'll do something that's beneficial to me. And I'll end the war, or I'll try to end the war, because, of course, the war won't end that way. I mean, it will just go into a different phase.
Can you see Trump withdrawing the United States from NATO or reducing the amount of money that it contributes, as he threatened during his previous presidency?
He threatened it multiple times. He's threatened it since then. And yes, it is very possible. And remember, the thing about NATO is, although there's a treaty and, you know, we have obligations and there's a infrastructure and institutions, all Trump has to do is say, I won't respect Article 5 of the NATO treaty. In other words, I won't come to the aid of a European country that's invaded. All he has to do is say it, or he can tweet it. And then the deterrence, because what NATO is a defensive alliance that deters the enemies of Europe. And once that people don't believe in that deterrence, once they say, well, Trump's not going to come to the aid of Poland or of Germany, then the value of NATO goes down quite rapidly. And yes, it is very possible that he could reduce the effectiveness of NATO.
Final thing, the subtitle of the book is The Dictators Who Want to Run the World. What chances are that they will end up running the world, that they will prevail over democratic institutions?
So I believe that our societies are resilient, and I believe that when they're challenged, we will be able to once again, we will be able to unify. You know, I believe it's very irresponsible to be pessimistic, especially, you know, you and I here in this nice city. With so many advantages, and there are people in Iran, in Russia, in Hong Kong who fight for their rights every day, and they do it incredibly bravely. And if they have the optimism to believe in change, then I think we should too.
Anne Applebaum, thank you very much for joining us. The book is Autocracy, Inc., The Dictators Who Want to Run the World.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper, weekdays from 4:30. Today.